Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, sponsored by WebSpy. It's September 14, 2010, and this is episode 259. Today we're going to take a look at the Image Prograph IPF 6350 large format printer from Canon. I bought this printer about a month ago and now I'm relatively confident printing with it. I figured I'd relay my thoughts and some of the technical details about this beautiful behemoth. Note that the images for today's episode will only be available in iTunes or on your iPod or on my blog at blog.martinbaileyphotography.com. Before we jump into that though, I'd like to say a huge thank you to our sponsors WebSpy, the internet monitoring, analysis and reporting specialists. If you have a Twitter account and a minute to spare, please go to my blog at blog.martinbaileyphotography.com and click on the text link underneath the WebSpy tile to the right. That will automatically tweet the message, thanks to @WebSpy for sponsoring the @MartinBaileyPhotography podcast, or you can just type that in on Twitter yourself if you prefer. To find out more about WebSpy and their products, go to webspy.com/MBP and use the code MBPWSY for a 10% discount on anything that you buy. My new Canon Image Prograph IPF 6350 large format printer was delivered on August 13, 2010. The first thing to note with this printer is it's big. Not huge as far as real sort of large format printers like the 44 or 60 inch models, but still, you know, with the ability to print 24 inch wide or 600 millimeter wide sheets or roll paper, it's a pretty hefty piece of hardware. It weighs 51 kilograms without the stand and 66 kilograms with the stand. I'm not sure how it is in other countries, but in Japan, some distributors provide the stand as an option and others just include it, but obviously they're going to be building that extra amount into the price. Take my advice though and get the stand. Trying to work with this printer on a table or a workbench could be a pain unless you have something about the size, you know, the same size as the stand that Canon create for it, on wheels, and something that you can leave the printer on all the time. If you don't have that, then just get the stand. On the stand, the dimensions of the printer are 39.1 inches high, 46.4 inches wide, and 34.3 inches deep. You also need space around the printer for airflow and to operate it. The company that I bought from here in Japan offered free delivery to drop the printer off in my car park. They wanted an extra $100 to bring it up to my third floor studio, or I could pay $500 to bring the printer up to the third floor, unpack it, set it all up on the stand, then install the drivers to my computer and check the connectivity and everything. They'd also take away all of the packaging materials. With me being pretty technical, I didn't like the idea of paying someone to install drivers and stuff, so I didn't take this service, and I wasn't too impressed with the $100 just to carry it up two flights of stairs, so I refused and just went with the free delivery. The more I thought about this decision, though, the more concerned I became. I had kind of thought that my wife and I could carry it up the stairs, but then read in the Canon manual that it requires three people to lift the printer onto the stand. I started to get really worried, and I called the distributors to see if I could add the setup fees, and they said that if I did, they'd need another 2 weeks for delivery, so I gave up on that idea. On the day of the delivery, when I got out to the truck, I was pretty shocked to see the size of the box that the printer was in. I wished I'd been able to take a photo of it because it really was huge. it wasn't really as, you know, it wasn't really even just a box. The printer was laid on polystyrene, like corners on the top of a huge wooden pallet. And there was some double thickness super strength cardboard on the top and the sides. My plan was to plead for help if my fears came true, and they'd come true. I asked the guys that delivered the printer to help me carry it up to the third floor, and one of them helped me to do so. It was the middle of August, so as I carried the printer, my hands started sweating and the plastic was slipping in my hands. We had to turn the printer on its side to get it up the stairs, and only just managed to get it around the corner through the door into the studio. I was so relieved when we put it down on the floor, but I already knew that it was going to be difficult to lift it again later with my wife after I'd put the stand together. I gave the delivery men $10 each for their trouble and figured it was still cheaper than the $100 that the distributor had asked for, but I was still wishing that I'd paid the $500 for the full treatment. After I'd set the stand up, I asked my wife to help, and she initially couldn't lift it. It just wasn't possible. After trying a few different ways, she was finally able to lift the printer up and straighten her legs. It was a tense minute or so until we got the printer in position on the stand, and I was able to bolt the printer from the bottom into the stand. Ultimately, I was able to get the printer set up, but the moral of this story is, unless you have a couple of strapping mates to help you, pay for the white glove treatment and have the printer installed by professionals. It's really not worth the hassle if you don't have the help. You can connect the printer with a USB cable or a network cable to your computer, that is, of course. With the printer having a gigabit network adapter installed, I figured I'd use network as opposed to USB so that I could print from multiple computers more easily. After connecting the power and the network cables without turning it on initially, I followed the instructions to fit the two print heads that come with the printer, but they're not fitted. It's not a difficult job, but there are parts that you aren't allowed to touch, which is always a little bit nerve-wracking for the uninitiated. Then you have to insert the 12 Lucia EX ink cartridges. The printer comes with only 90 milliliters of ink in the cartridges, despite them being 130 milliliter cartridges. A little bit stingy on Canon's part, I thought, but then, you know, it does cost over $900 to buy a full set of inks, so I can kind of understand too. Having given each cartridge a bit of a shake and dropped them all in, you can check that everything's okay with the little red light in front of each ink cartridge cover. The labeled on the front of each cartridge or in front of each cartridge slot are color-coded and have the code number the letters for each of the cartridges. So there's little room for error here. As the printer takes about 20 minutes to initiate and draw the ink through the pipes, etc., the manual suggests quite considerately that you use this 20 minutes to install the printer drivers and software, which I did. In my network router with the settings, I made sure that the printer would always be assigned the same IP address so that the printer driver port, which is basically just a mapped IT port, would not lose contact of the printer if the IP address was changed in the future due to, say, you know, the timing of other devices coming on the network, etc. After I confirmed that I could connect to the printer from my PC, I loaded the half roll of paper that Canon includes and proceeded to tell the printer what sort of paper it was. I'll go into this in more detail later, but basically you have to specify the type of paper and the length of the roll when you insert the paper. The printer then continues to print a series of patches and then from time to time pulls the paper back inside the printer and scans the results. Then using these results, it calibrates itself to ensure that the dual printer heads are aligned. And this is basically the same as when you know, a lot of times if you buy a consumer printer, you'll print out a couple of pages of lines on the paper, and then you have to tell the printer which number of the sets of lines is the most in line. Well, the IPF 6350 does this automatically, which I thought was pretty cool. This might also be a good time to mention that the IPF 6350 has a total of 30,720 nozzles with 2,560 nozzles per ink head, you know, for each of the colours of ink that comes through. And they're at a pitch of 1,200 dpi. Using the optical scanning mechanism that I just mentioned, the printer automatically detects non-firing nozzles and compensates for that using the other nozzles, basically. I have never had problems with nozzle blockage on my old Canon Pro 9500 printer, but I can imagine that it would be a real pain when printing, say, a 24 by 36 inch print if you had lines on the print caused by a blocked nozzle. So this functionality is very welcome as well. The printer comes with drivers for, you know, most of the Windows operating systems and both 32-bit and 64-bit. The Mac OS, of course, too. It also comes with a whole load of applications. There are plugins for Digital Photo Professional, but that software is the son of Satan, so I won't go into that plugin. So we'll just touch on the drivers and the software that I'm using today. Before you use the paper, you have to configure it basically either on the small LCD panel on the printer or via the IPF 6350 media configuration tool. When you install the tool with the drivers, you add a batch of preset genuine papers based on your location. You select the location. I believe this is based on what Canon has available in the various locations around the globe. You can also specify some generic papers and also cloths and fabric, as well as synthetic paper, film, among other things. You have to select Add Genuine Paper from the Media Configuration tool to tell the printer what the paper is and input the size of the paper on the printer LCD as you load it. Once you've added a paper, it will be available on the LCD for the future reference and use, and you can also select it from the printer drivers now too. This batch of presets also includes 10 special settings, that's special in quotes, which is what you have to select when you're adding third-party papers, such as the Harney Mueller papers that I use. When you add a new paper, the media configuration tool sends a subset of data to the printer, and you then have to load the paper, be it a sheet paper or roll paper. After you load it, you then have to select the paper with the name that you specified when you were creating the custom paper, and then the printer asks the length of the paper. It gets the width automatically when you load it. After loading it, the printer will again print some sample patches, but this time it's detecting the best settings to correctly feed the paper through the printer. It's probably a good time to mention too that if you want to use the accounting manager that I'll talk about later, you'll need to add the same paper multiple times if you use more than one width of paper on the roll, and probably should also do this for various sized sheet paper too. This will probably also lead to better paper advancement through the printer. The printer uses a vacuum to suck the paper against the platen, which is the plate below the paper. When you add the new paper, you can adjust the feed and the vacuum strength, as well as a few other paper-specific settings, but so far I've been fine with the auto settings here. I did notice some black marking on the underside of some of the sheet paper that I did some of my initial test prints too, but that cleared up after I wiped what looked like a little bit of oil or grease off the paper guide rollers. The one thing that I find annoying when working with this printer is that despite it being able to print in 16-bit mode, only the Photoshop plugin has this ability on Windows. The Windows OS does not natively support 16-bit printing yet, so this means that the only way that Lightroom will be able to print in 16-bit mode is if Windows supports it, basically. Canon could probably develop a plugin for Lightroom, but if that's like the one that they have in Photoshop, you'd probably have to export the image to a standalone print module and lose many of the benefits of the Lightroom print module, which is one of my favorite modules. I've done all of my printing from Lightroom until now, basically, you know, just because it's so easy to use and you can save everything as a preset. If a Canon plugin just made me export to a separate module to do all the same stuff that you have to do in Photoshop, there wouldn't be much point. The Mac OS, though, does natively support 16-bit printing, so Lightroom on the Mac does have 16-bit printing for this printer. I would just really like to see Windows include 16-bit printing support, as I don't want to have to crank up my Mac just for printing and have, you know, I really just have too much investment in Windows to switch over. And I really don't want to get into sort of, you know, copying my library over and things like that. It just makes the whole workflow a pain. Although I've not tested to see if there really is any improvement when printing in 16-bit compared to 8-bit, what this means is that I am at the moment pretty much stuck with printing from from Photoshop CS5 with the Canon plugin. This means that I don't get the benefit of Lightroom's automatic resizing and output sharpening as well. So before I send my image to the printer, I have to resize the image that I want to print at to the size that I want to print the image at. You can use the Canon resizing and scaling in the printer, and they do have a sharpening option, but I haven't really gotten used to all of this, basically to the point where I haven't got used to the way you resize everything so that you can get the borders the right size. It's pretty fiddly, and it just makes me miss Lightroom a lot. I've been using Nik Software's Sharpener Pro 3 to sharpen the image before sending to the printer. And you do that specifically for the output. You have to select the type of paper that you're looking at. And also, if you want to go into details, you can select the viewing distance, things like that. It's easy enough to use, but it means that even if I didn't have to do any soft proofing to my images, I pretty much have to create and save a PSD file for everything that I print. And that's not a bad thing, I suppose, but it's just not necessary when working in Lightroom alone. Once I've done my sharpening or applied a boilerplate, whatever you want to do, I'm ready to send the image to the printer, which you do by selecting File, Export, IPF6350 Print Plugin. This invokes the printer plugin, and you can start to lay out the image for your print. You need to select the paper that you already added via the media configuration tool and the resolution of the image and whether to use 8-bit or 16-bit printing, which is linked in the plugin to the quality of the gradation of the print to be printed. I've created my own printer paper profiles, so I select them under the output profile, but you can use the profiles from the paper manufacturer or Canon if you're using Canon paper. I've got a little bit of hat eating to do here, in that I've said in the past that I always use perceptual rendering mode when printing, but when soft proofing images for this printer, I've found that relative colorimetric often gives better results, so I've been using that more often recently. Once you've completed the settings on the main screen of the plugin, you'll want to go to the page setup screen and get your image laid out however you want it. If you check the screenshot on the blog, you'll see that I've not used the enlarging in the printer driver, as I mentioned earlier, but I probably will give that a try as I get more used to the plugin. You specify the paper size here, as well as whether you want to print the image in the middle of the paper or specify your own size for the top and left margins, giving you more control over where your image sits on the paper. That's what I've done here, as I wanted the fine art spacing with a larger border below the image than above. You'll select the paper source here too, either roll paper or sheet, and you also have to tell the plugin the width of the roll of paper that you'll print to. That's pretty much it though, and then you just let it rip and watch your print come out of the printer. I should note here that this printer is fast. I haven't timed it, but even when printing to 24 inch wide roll paper, the print seems to come out in no time. As a guess, I'd say it's about 3 minutes for a sheet of Super A1, at high quality that is. For reference, I'd say that it's even faster than my Pro 9500 from Canon can print a sheet of A3 or Super A3, which is a quarter of the size. Before we move on, I did want to just mention that so far I've been incredibly impressed with the colour gamut from this printer. It is able to reproduce far more colours and subtle tonal values than my Canon Pro 9500. Even when I'm soft proofing before printing, there's often just no need to change the image. And on images with very bright reds and greens that often take a little more work in soft proofing, they take much less time to get right than with my old printer. The new Lucia EX pigment ink system, plus the additional two colours that this printer has over the 9500, really seem to have improved the quality and accuracy of image reproduction. A few weeks ago, I showed you via a video how to create a gallery wrap, and for that, I was using Honeymule Daguerre canvas on a 17-inch roll. As I said earlier, when you load a new roll of paper, you tell the printer the length. The full rolls of Honeymule paper that I've been buying are 39 feet long. One problem is though that when you print using a few feet of paper and then you remove the roll, the next time you load the roll, you're not likely to know exactly how much paper has already been used, and so you can't tell the printer how much paper's left. If you are near the end of a roll, this could result in you running out of paper before the end of your print. To overcome this, you can select to have the printer print a barcode on the end of the roll when you eject the paper. Because the printer has that scanner built in, when you reload the paper at a later date, it reads the barcode and can automatically tell what paper it is and how much paper is left on the roll. This, of course, does waste about 5 centimeters of paper each time you reload the paper, but I think it's worth it to easily keep track of the paper that I'm using. Yesterday, I printed my first 24 by 36 inch print, which will be a gift for the colleagues that I'm leaving behind at my day job that I just resigned from to pursue my photography full time. And I used a different paper to that which I'd already loaded, so I needed to switch them out. The IPF 6350 takes both 2-inch and 3-inch core roll paper. The Daguerre canvas comes on a 2-inch core, which is the native size that the roll holder takes, and we can see that in one of the images that I've put on the blog post. The Honeymule Museum etching paper, though, is much stiffer paper, and I assume to prevent it from curling, it comes on a 3-inch core. To fit roll paper with a 3-inch core, you have to use an adapter you have to put something on the right side of the roll holder, like the one that we see in the image that we've got on the iTunes, in the Enhanced podcast right now, and also on the blog. You need a different second side. The left side has a roll holder stopper, and you just have to use the 3-inch core version of that instead when you're using the 3-inch core papers. And these come with the printer as standard, of course. I should also note that when handling the rolls of paper, or any large sheets of paper for that matter, I always use white cotton gloves to prevent oils on my skin touching the paper and discoloring it either now or in the future. One of my best-selling prints, and the one that my colleagues liked the most on my old office wall, was the one from the misty morning in Hokkaido in 2008 with the red crown cranes in the river and the couple dancing in the distance. Although the printed image didn't fill the paper, it was so cool to watch one of my favourite images come out of the printer on 24-inch wide paper. Here's the finished print in a frame that I picked up yesterday. I shot just the picture initially, but it's difficult to see the size of the print without a reference point, so I stuck my fat head in there as well to give you some scale. I applied my signature with a water-based pigment ink fade-proof pen from Sakura Color Products Corporation in Japan. I created a simple boilerplate in Illustrator for the middle and added a simple message on the left to my buddies from the old day job in Photoshop before printing. There are a few other bits of software that come with the printer that I wanted to mention before we finish. First, the printer comes with an accounting module built into the drivers. If you register the cost of your ink cartridges and the paper that you use, you can use the account manager to calculate the exact cost of the prints that you make. This is not only a lot of fun, but it's essential if you're going to be printing for other people. I already have a few people that are asking if they can come around to do some large prints, which I don't mind doing. But when it comes to asking for money for the prints, it's really useful to be able to show them exactly how much each one cost. Of course, this cost doesn't include my time or wear and tear on the printer, or the time spent learning to use it, or the skill involved in soft proofing and laying out the print, etc., etc. So this would not be the amount that I charged a total stranger for a print. Also, it goes without saying that if I'm printing a fine art print of my own work or prints for a client from a portrait shoot, for example, I'll be charging much more than this. As you can see, though, the print that I did for my colleagues cost 1,790 yen, which is about $20 at the current exchange rate. Not cheap by any means, so you don't want to be making too many mistakes with these large prints. Test prints on smaller paper stock is certainly the order of the day. As I say, the printer comes with a lot of software, but let's look at one last thing that I'm finding useful before we finish. If you enter the IP address of the printer into a web browser, the printer dishes up a nice remote UI admin console to any computer on your network. I can even check the ink levels on my printer from my iPhone if I needed to. You don't need to install the drivers or anything to check if things are okay with the printer or modify settings or, you know, check logs, etc. Although the printer has a very low-level sleep mode, basically turning it off but keeping an eye out for jobs coming in over the network, I'm not leaving mine on all the time at the moment. It just gets too hot here in my studio when I'm not around. I'll be in here much more often now that this is my full-time job, of course, and I'm looking forward to the cooler days coming soon with the autumn. So I might start leaving it on, but for the moment I'm turning it off when it's not in use. And when I do that, I'm covering it with a large piece of plastic sheet from the hardware store. This is just to keep the dust out, as dust in a printer can cause problems. It not only clogs the heads, but it can also drop onto the face of your paper as you're printing. Basically, you print onto the dust and not the paper, and then if the dust falls away later, you end up with a white spot, which I like to avoid. One other thing that I didn't mention is that the printer also requires what they call a maintenance cartridge, which is used to dump waste ink during cleaning cycles. These are about $70 to replace, but I don't know yet how long they'll last. I'm figuring quite a long time. I'll find out as soon as I start to print more in the coming months, and if it seems excessive, I'll let you know. I haven't really done any comparison tests, and at $20 a chuck, I'm not going to be starting to do multiple copies of the same print with different settings just to see if there are any minute differences in quality. But my initial impressions of this printer is that it delivers incredibly high quality prints. I've output large prints on Harney Mule, Daguerre canvas, and museum etching now. And for smaller prints, I've used the Harney Mule photo rag and fine art baryta paper, all of which are showing excellent results. The printer reproduces a huge color gamut, amazing tonal range, easily achieved vivid and highly saturated colors, as well as breathtaking black and white prints. At $3,995 on B&H and another $900 just to replace a full set of ink cartridges, this certainly isn't the printer for the hobbyist. There are over 1,000 pages in the multiple user manuals, and it takes a fair bit of reading and studying just to figure out how to set the printer up, put the paper in, and start printing. But if you have a need for large prints and you're somewhat technical and enjoy getting your hands dirty like I do, then you'll love this printer. Just make sure that you have enough space to put it and a few friends to help you get it set up, or buy the white glove delivery service when you buy the printer, and you won't regret a thing. Before we finish today, I did want to say a big, huge thank you to all of you that have sent messages of congratulations following last week's podcast, in which I announced that I'm leaving my full-time job to pursue my passion of photography full-time. Your messages of encouragement have been absolutely amazing to see over the last week. I'm really amazed by the response from this incredible community, so thanks very much to each and every one of you for that. One last quick thanks to WebSpy for continuing to support the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Remember too that you can find me on Flickr and Facebook, as well as Twitter, and of course my blog and the Photography Forum. All links are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you just have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye bye.
This is Dave Warner, and I'm the host of the LensFlare35.com podcast. Each week I bring you interviews with some of the top photographers using digital SLR cameras. They share some of their coolest tips and tricks, techniques, and news about what they're up to. So please take a moment to visit the website or subscribe to LensFlare35 on iTunes.
The Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is a proud member of the Photocast Network. Find this and other great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com.